Hello, welcome to the Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about dystopian futures and alternate futures in comic books. Of course, to my co-host, Jason from Saskatoon.
Good evening.
Also with us is Red Ink.
Hello.
Yeah, so, like I said, tonight we're talking about alternate futures, most likely dystopian futures in comics. I think the big one that everyone knows off the bat is Chris Claremont's Days of Future Past.
Oh, yeah. If you're a huge fucking nerd, yeah.
That is the big one, though. And as I pointed out many times in many episodes in the past, in the comics, the Days of Future Past, the storyline is only 2 issues long. It's actually quite a great tale of telling a story very economically. But Days of Future Past, for people who don't know, is basically the mutants have lost. Sentinels have taken over the United States. Other countries have basically said, hey, yeah, we're cool with mutants, but so the Earth is stuck in a perpetual deadlock between the Sentinels, other nations, and it's a big fucking mess.
It's like George Orwell's Ultimate Future, but it has mutants.
And the one thing to note is, like, nearly every hero we love is already dead. Including the Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, Iron Man, Captain America. And not because they're mutants, because the Sentinels determined that these are the people that would stand up to them. And that's why they were eliminated.
They're eliminated because they can give birth to mutants.
Both reasons are valid.
Because the Sentinel, like, it's explained that the Sentinels take out mutants.
Mm-hmm.
Then they come up with the idea of anybody to take out down anybody who can give birth to mutants.
Yes.
And then they just enslave regular humanity.
Yeah. So Days of Future Past in the comics is an adult Kitty Pryde doing a Hail Mary, let's fix this future by sending myself into the past storyline. This story has lots of important parts to it, specifically that introduces the idea of the assassination of Senator Kelly. It introduces the idea of Mystique as part of this assassination plot. It's a story that's been adapted many times. I believe the crappy X-Men cartoon on Fox tried a version of it.
How dare you?
Using Cable.
That show was a masterpiece. How dare you?
Yes, our Lord, God, and Savior Blanchard declared it so.
You have to see, like, Greta Thornburg. How dare you? How dare you?
You should be ashamed of yourself.
But anyways, Days of Future Past has been adapted multiple times. I think it was even adapted in Wolverine and the X-Men. If I remember correctly,
that was the basis for the entire first season, and that was a great cartoon. Wasn't a huge fan of the animation design, but yeah, it's basically from the future. Professor X is communicating with the past because he's in a coma in the present day, and they avoid that future. But when they connect with Charles again, it's given birth to the Age of Apocalypse.
Which I thought was pretty hilarious in a weird kind of sadistic way. Leads us to the next future, but I first want to also just say I've always heaped praise on the Days of Future Past movie because I think it did the most with the franchise as movies as you could with what the pieces that they had. Very impressive work. But Age of Apocalypse. Let's talk about Age of Apocalypse.
Yeah. I mean, Age of Apocalypse, it's a bit of a cop-out because it's not so much an alternate future or it's a dystopian timeline. It's an alternate timeline. For those of our listeners that don't know, in the 90s, Professor X's son Legion goes back in time to kill Magneto, basically the Deadpool killing baby Hitler scenario from the end of the second Deadpool movie, and he accidentally kills his own son, his own father, and that tumbles the domino so that when the future back in the now new modern day, Apocalypse has taken over like most of North America, you know, the X-Men are led by Magneto and his wife Rogue. Gambit is the lead of the Thieves Guild, and it is everything that I love and hate of 90s excess in storytelling, because it's some really cool ideas of alternate takes on characters. Like, now it's Gambit and the Externals is one of the miniseries where Gambit and this merry band of mutant thieves try to go to the Shi'ar galaxy and steal the M-Kron crystal because they're going to use that to reset the timeline. Or you have, what was it? Factor X or something. And it's two of Apocalypse's lieutenants, Scott Summers and Alex Summers, are now like his most fervent servants. Or you have Wolverine and Jean Grey have gotten together, and Wolverine has the requisite metal stump missing hand thing, which I always thought was retarded.
There's still claws in there. He pops his claws out of that.
I know, it just looks dumb. But I mean, it's kind of like an alternate, dark alternate take on the present. And honestly, until this point in the comics, I never considered Apocalypse that big a threat. Like, he's a bad guy and he's a major threat. It's just, you see what happens if he gets his shit together with this storyline. So, I know, what did you like about this, Ben?
I gotta be honest, I didn't like a lot of it. There's, like you said, it's 90s excess. You say it as a positive, but I look at it, it's like all I see are negatives.
I said
Ben was a DC boy.
Yes, I was.
You gotta remember that. Like,
yes,
he didn't like Marvel. Except for Spider-Man. Yes, I was about to crack myself. You did read Spider-Man.
Yes, of course I did.
And I said it's everything that I love and hate of 90s excess, Ben. I don't completely love this. I do very much enjoy it. But there is so very much wrong as well. And go back to Days of Future Past for a second. There was this three-issue miniseries. I still have it in my collection. It's the original first printing. It's been reprinted a couple of times. It was Wolverine Days of Future Past, which is after the events of that timeline, and you see other more prominent Marvel X-Men characters at the time dealing with this world. So you see like Jubilee and Sync and Leech from like Generation X are part of this. Emma Frost is running a rebellion, or just trying to foment a rebellion of sorts from like some South American tropical island. Baron Zemo and the Thunderbolts are working for the Sentinel regime. And the art was all done by Joe Bennett, who's one of my favorite Marvel artists to come out of the 90s. So there's a side like that. I know. What about you, Red? What's an alternate comic feature that you like?
Off the top of my head, probably MC2.
MC2 is my favorite. Yes.
I did not see that coming.
Why did you not see that coming?
I thought you were going to say like Judge Dredd or, you know, something else. Like, I'm not, I was like, wow, I like Marvel MC2 as well. I'm like, holy shit.
Red is justifiably, and I'm the same way, big fan of Mayday Parker.
A lot of people don't realize, like, everybody likes to talk about comics and they say, oh, female-led comics don't last. They always get rebooted in a year. Blah, blah, blah. Mayday Parker has broken the fucking record.
Yeah.
She had a long-running series for almost 10 fucking years.
Yeah. And all spinning out of one of the last issues of the last, like, ongoing Marvel's What If comic as well. I think it was 105 or something like that. But yeah. So who's Mayday Parker for our listeners, Red?
Mayday Parker is during one of the awful fucking clone saga. One of the things was Mary Jane was pregnant. Then Green Goblin attacks and she loses the baby. Well, she gives birth to the baby early and ends up losing it. There is a panel that shows somebody handing off a package, which is the size of a baby, to Norman Osborn. and that plot line is abandoned. Never thought of it again. Turns out in this reality, the package was Mayday. Peter figured it out, went and saved her, but in the process of saving his child, he damaged his leg beyond repair. So he had to retire from being Spider-Man. Mayday Parker is the daughter of Mary Jane and Peter Parker, who eventually grows up and develops spider powers.
Now, if I recall correctly, or maybe incorrectly, is she classified as a mutant in that future?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, it's not like a lot of kids getting powers that are passed down just through their blood.
All of Peter's progeny and all alternate futures are considered mutants and have been actually, to varying levels, accepted and even welcomed into the X-Men lineups. It
depends on how you define the mutant and the writer. Like, a lot of writers will go through, if you're born with your powers, you're mutant. But some other writers will go, you have to have the X-Factor gene.
Yes. And I
Mayday think does not have the X-Factor gene, but she was born with her powers. So
there's lowercase M mutant and then X-Factor capital M mutant.
I think that's just some sort of weird form of discrimination.
MC2 was one of the first series of comics like that I got in on the ground floor with, like, the first issue. So, yeah, I mean, you had Spider-Girl, you had Avengers Next, J2, Son of the Juggernaut, who I was all for that costume until he decided to do that early 90s trend of tying a flannel shirt around his waist because, well, his dad's Kane Marco and he just wanted some part of his dad with him. But they tried to make him, like, very much in the mold of, like, wimpy Peter Parker when he's just Zane Marco.
There's lots of, like, MC2 has lots of great character ideas and lots of character ideas that felt like they had an idea on paper, but when it was time to take the crap, they just, like, fucked it up.
Well, the problem was, MCU became the training ground for a lot of fucking writers, like, or MC2, I mean.
Yes.
Like, it was considered, like, well, we just hired this guy, did a couple issues, he's not that great, we'll give him an MCU line to fucking, MC2 line to write, put a not that well fucking known comic artist on there as well.
Like, yeah. Like for instance, Spider-Girl, just absolutely great. Dark Devil was always, like, on paper, it sounds very 90s, but I never liked Dark Devil. American Dream, I'm kind of okay with American Dream, but,
the original Thunderstrike son, Kevin, absorbs the mace and its power, so he becomes like the next Thunderstrike. You had Argo, who's the son of Hercules. Was it Cole Tiger, who's like a mutant son of T'Challa?
There was a lot of them. There was fucking there's a
Stinger.
I was also like the Fantastic Five was a really weird lineup too.
And overall, like, the thing that I liked about this, and it just was spoken of in the time of then prominent magazine Wizard and, you know, other places, the overall, because it had guys like Tom DeFalco and Ron Lim, Todd Nock, I can't remember, it's the guy, he was the artist on Untold Tales of Spider-Man. It's on the tip of my tongue. I'll remember it later. The MC2 universe had this old school feel because they told like one and done stories or one and two issue stories. It had very classics like A Next had this one where like the crazed daughter of Janet Van Dyne and Hank Pym. Hope comes for revenge. And you got Big Man, who's her brother, who has, like, all, like, you know, the giant man powers, and has like these evil versions of older Marvel villains. And the MC2, like, they had one of my favorite characters on the A-Next series was Mainframe, who you think is, like, some dude in an Iron Man suit. Turns out he's just an AI, and he's got this satellite overhead that's just constantly building copies of his chassis. So when he gets trashed, he just comes back, and he's like, what's going on?
Well, like I said, lots of these characters are sounds cool on paper, but crap the bed. Like Red said, this is the proving ground of new untested writers. Like, some of these weren't even like great ideas. Some of these were just, I had a great design. I sketched a great design for a character. Let's make a book. Like fucking, what's her name? Wild Thing.
The daughter of Wolverine and Elektra.
Is such a bad book.
Yes, but clearly they were onto something, because eventually we got X-23.
I can say that tangentially related at best, and she's supposed to be the daughter of Wolverine and Elektra, but she has Psylocke claws.
Well, mutant powers. It's not like, you know, you got two parents, and there's no guarantee that their progeny's powers are going to be reflective of either or both of them. I mean, you spoke of Dark Devil. I like Dark Devil's design. It's dumb, but it's fun. And it bothered me they never actually explained his origin until pretty well after 10 years. Like, it took forever down the line. It turns out he's like the son of Ben Reilly, but he's possessed by both Matt Murdock and Johnny Blaze. So he has a combination of Daredevil and Ghost Rider's powers. So it's wonderfully dumb stuff like that.
And, like, I think that, like, 60% of the Spider-Girl cast is okay. But all the stuff that came in from the other... Okay, Red, go ahead, Red.
The thing was, when you read the MC2, and if you just followed Spider-Girl, Spider-Girl was her own island.
Yes, like, it was.
She barely ever crossed over into the other comics. Just once in a while you'd see somebody like make a cameo or something, but she was her own contained storyline, her own island in this sea of garbage.
Now, what I did like was there, like I think it was like the 60% way through the Spider-Girl run, Peter started finally being Spider-Man again. And I liked those issues. Especially, well, one of my favorite stories was actually when you had a new mysterious Spider-Man show up, and there was like, who's this Spider-Man? And it turns out it's the son of Jessica Drew, Jerry Drew, big Spider-Man fanboy, decides to be Spider-Man. It's a cool story because he's trying to be his hero, and it's a good story. I liked it. That's the stuff I liked in the Spider-Girl MC2 title. There's, like Red said, Spider-Girl was an island. And to its credit, it was an island because it didn't let, like, all the other weird MC2 shit infect it. I think there's actually a couple of MC2, like, MC2 universe events, and they barely touched Spider-Girl.
Like, yeah, they
did one about the retrieving Reed Richards from the Negative Zone or some shit, and it's like, okay. Whatever.
Well, they had a couple of miniseries in the early to mid-aughts, like Last Man Standing and such, which, you know, used those characters for the first time in years. And like you said, Spider-Girl just had, like, it consistently being published either through a couple of ongoing, some miniseries, even some digital comics, such like that. Another... It's not a widely used alternate Marvel future, but I always enjoyed the character of the Maestro from the Hulk storyline Future Imperfect. And you see it comes from that classic radio, you know, nuclear apocalypse sort of future where the Hulk is the last surviving gamma mutant in the world. And he's basically gone mad with power because he's constantly absorbing all this excess radiation in the air. And gave birth to one of the my favorite alternate Dark Hulks in the Maestro, because it's, you know, Bruce gone mad with his power versus like the World Breaker or Devil Hulk or something like that. And have you guys ever read that story?
I don't like Maestro. People fucking Hulk, not just people, Hulk fans love Maestro. I don't get it.
Evil Hulk, that's really
that's it. So uninteresting to me. I mean, I would rather read the time where Joe Fixit was teaming up with Wolverine as Patch and like Madripoor instead of that shit.
Yeah, but Joe Fixit was never really an evil Hulk. I mean, that's why a lot of people like this. I mean, how about you, Red?
Well, at the moment, like during the 90s, it was pretty much Professor Hulk, where it was the emergence of Bruce Banner, Grey Hulk, and Green Hulk all in one fucking body. The Maestro was supposed to show you a future. What if he kept on doing that and eventually what he would become? Everybody thinks it's this great story, but it's a reflection of the character. It's a dark reflection of Professor Hulk.
Yeah, that's why I liked it. It's that it's a fractured take on this long-lived character and something that hadn't really been done before. But when you talk about alternate futures in the Marvel Universe, the kind of gold standard in some respects is Marvel 2099.
I wouldn't say gold standard. It's certainly a standard. People know it. It's Doom 2099 is an interesting take on Dr. Doom as a continuing villain. The only character that really had legs in that was Spider-Man 2099.
The Punisher for part of its run, the Punisher 2099 comic was okay for part of its run, but eventually it just went right off the rails. But when I say gold standard, it's just as far as
my point isn't like a different kind of pointing.
Thank you, Ben. No, when I say gold standard, it's like Days of Future Past, Marvel Tuna. Those are the most well known, and I think to a very large extent, the best versions of future Marvel events and storytelling like that. I mean, it again, 90s as fuck. I mean, they're trying to create new like cuss words and shock and what like that, which I'm pretty sure somebody read 2000 AD and thought Drac was a really good cuss word, but we got to have our own. Marvel 2099 was very heavily, and I don't think anyone can argue against this, was very heavily influenced by Blade Runner. Because it's this future where corporations are so much more powerful than any actual governments, and, you know, it's very much Big Brother, flying cars, technology in the most innocuous of commonplace things. Like, everyone classes or class warfare with, you know, if you have this black card, it basically means you're so rich, it's a waste of time for the police to even try to arrest you. The police are, now that you're on a payment plan with the public eye, where, you know, you better be paid up that month or otherwise they are not going to come and save your life from these roving gangs of body, organ harvesters that just like troll the streets looking for some asshole walking around by himself. And you get, like Ben said, Doom 2099, which they never actually confirmed whether it was Doom or not. It's just some random guy showed up.
They confirmed it was his son.
Christoph?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know about Christoph, but
Christoph wasn't his son. Christoph was like a construct Doom made from a loyal servant.
His adopted son. But yeah, I mean, Doom is this bolt of lightning. This guy shows up and he finds his country's been overrun by these corporate interests. I forget, what was the one, was it Ravage? Where he started off as like this Mad Max ripoff, and then he randomly became like some kind of feral beast man.
I don't know. I think we're sort of lingering on the Marvel despotic futures enough as is. I think the last one we should talk about is probably Old Man Logan.
Oh, Ghost Rider 2099. Yeah. Fucking love that one.
Like, my problem with the 2099 universe was it got boring.
Oh yeah.
To me, it was like a bunch of fucking kids straight out of college. Oh, I watched Blade Runner. I watched this. I watched 2001 Space Odyssey. I watched all these fucking dystopian future Mad Max shit. I'm going to write this. And it just... eventually, just like, I've seen it all. And your character designs, when you make new characters, you're like, oh, I'm going to make a Venom of the future. And Venom just looks fucking terrible.
And
just give it up.
Yeah. The thing that I like the most about at least version one of 2099 was it actually had an ending in the 90s. Like, it started about 1993 and it ended about 98, 99 with this one shot called 2099 Manifest Destiny. And by this point in the series, the Phalanx X-Men Cyber, it's the same species that Warlock from New Mutants came from. They've come to Earth and basically had like a water world like effect. Like, the whole world's messed up, but people survived. And they have this one shot that just kind of sums up the story, and that's it. 2099 since has been used several times. Like, they introduced a new version of 2099 during Superior Spider-Man, which is kind of the current version that Marvel toys with now and again. Like, Deadpool's gone to that future of 2099. And, I mean, overall, it's this, on the wiki, it's listed as a cyberpunk dystopia, which is kind of my favorite flavor of that. And like you said, Ben, to get away from the Marvel here, who amongst us has read Transmetropolitan?
I have, but I didn't really think much of it.
Yeah. Have you ever read this, Red?
No.
Okay. Created by problematic comic creator Warren Ellis. It's, what if Hunter S. Thompson existed in the world of Blade Runner? And it's a commentary on excess and political... there's a word used, like politics and how technology affects sexual identity and just all these different ideas, stuff that we don't even think about in our modern society. He kind of took an eye, this is what's going to happen in the future if we keep leaning on these excesses. I highly recommend the series. It's, I think it was drawn the whole way through by Derek Robertson, with a couple issues here and there. They had fill-in artists. I highly recommend it. What's the other one? For those of us, the first manga that I ever really got into in my 20s was Fist of the North Star. And I'm not going to lie, I got into that because of that horrible North American adaptation film before I found the true Fist of the North Star with the anime and the manga.
Where Vader had his magic dust in his pocket?
Yes.
He had this dust. I don't know what it was, but he kept it in his pocket, and he'd take a handful of it, and he'd sniff it.
You sure that wasn't just cocaine?
It was cocaine. Like, that's the joke.
Yeah.
Like, the guy who fucking describes it has no idea what he's fucking describing.
It's cocaine.
But fucking Vader was just high as fuck while they were filming that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's DC had a couple of futures, but they never really interested me. Like, every time DC tried to come up with a storyline of here's an alternate future where things are fucked up, you never really stay there long enough to care, and the writer who usually does it is trying to go ahead.
I know an alternate future you love.
Are you talking about Kingdom Come?
No. Talking about Batman Beyond.
Okay, I do love Batman Beyond. I think that Batman Beyond is a great series with great characters. Great ways of coming up with a new Rogues Gallery that has shades of the old Rogues Gallery, but complete new flavors with it. Like, Ink is this character that's designed for a limited animation style of Bruce Timm style, because, like, trying to get a character like Ink to look good in, like, a photorealistic style is not going to look great, you know?
Yeah, no. I mean, clearly, she's Clayface for Terry McGinnis's Batman.
She's a lot of things, honestly. That's what I mean, is every one of them is a little bit different. Like, you know, Batman, Terry McGinnis's Batman even has a character that hunts him, much like Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah. Well, you have, I mean, for those that don't know the story of Batman Beyond right now, it's like 50 plus years in the future. Bruce Wayne is retired from being Batman after nearly taking a criminal's life with a handgun and declaring never again, and just becomes this bitter old recluse. And Neo Gotham, as it's actually called in some of the comics, like, and again, it's hugely influenced by the design aesthetic of Blade Runner.
Akira. More Akira than Blade Runner.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, cyberpunk things. But when you talk about, like, the villains,
the villains make Batman Beyond, in my opinion. Yeah.
And the problem with the villains, or at least Blight, who's like the numbers, but like the Joker, not the Jokers, like the street gang that's, you know, inspired by the Clown Prince of Crime. Like, Blight, it was really this guy, Derek Powers, who killed Terry's father, which drove him towards his destiny as Batman Beyond. And he gets faceful of this nerve agent, which is the only way to kill it is to use excessive radiation. And then he becomes, like, basically a future version of the Batman, classic Batman villain, Dr. Phosphorus.
Blight is great in the fact that he is just, he reminds me of Red Foreman's character from RoboCop, and just how crass he
Boddicker.
Is. Yeah. He just how crass he is. Like, great moment is when he asks Batman, "Who are you?" And he says, "You killed my father." And just the flippant, you have no idea how little that narrows it down. Just the way he says it is just so cold and so.
No, I mean, there's that. But I just think Blight, because he's the guy that ordered Terry's father's death, and he's taken over Wayne Enterprises, made it Wayne Powers, and he's using, like, they have that great line from Kevin Conroy in the pilot. It's like, nerve gas. He's using my company to make nerve gas. And you see that. Not even, he hasn't even become Blight at this point. He's just such a asshole that he just burrows under Bruce's skin like that. I just don't think Blight was used. I think he should have been used a bit more, not made like every episode Blight's there, but I just wish they would have used him a bit more. Another villain I liked was Spellbinder, which is, he's basically, not to say basically that he is actually Scarecrow, but he's, would be analogous to Scarecrow with him being like Terry's high school guidance counselor. He has this technology that can hypnotize people and flies around in this weird eyeball looking cybercraft.
Well, Spellbinder is interesting in the fact that he just overrides your sense of sight, and only your sense of sight. And another villain I thought was really interesting was Shriek, the guy who uses just sound, because he does this great demonstration in Derek Powers' office, where he turns the lights off and he uses just like this little sound projector to make it sound like a train's coming. He turns on a flashlight and it's like he has him. It's like, holy shit, he has him. It's like, just with sound manipulation, like, Shriek is like this idea, high concept villain with just one motif going for him. And I think that Batman Beyond villains, I said before, like new shades of old Batman concepts, villain concepts. I think there's a lot of Spider-Man concepts in there too, honestly, because we haven't talked about the Hunter character that's very, very Kraven the Hunter.
Well, yeah, I mean, but Terry's aesthetic overall, like his backstory, everything, like, and it just has this Spider-Man feel, because, you know, with his dad dying like that, is as much as that is Bruce Wayne's origin, that's also, you know, Peter Parker and Uncle Ben. And also another reason why I like Blight so much, because he comes off, he has this Norman Osborn Green Goblin kind of shtick going on. With you, Red, what's a villain you like if we haven't mentioned them already from Beyond?
For me, it wasn't so much the villains that interest me in Batman Beyond. It was the relationship between Terry and Bruce. Because Terry is trying to find his place and become Batman. At the same time, Bruce does not want to give up being Batman. Even though he's retired, he does not want to fucking give it up. And that's why he becomes like Terry's fucking man in the chair and shit. And he becomes controlling. But as time passes, he lets Terry like fucking fly. Like, he lets Terry do his own thing and trusts him more and more. It's not fucking like in your face. It's not like they have a line where I trust you more, Terry, because I seen you do this and I think you're now worthy of being Batman. It's nothing like that. It's shown through action.
Yes.
Like, Bruce becomes slowly takes his hands off the reins as Terry grows up slowly.
Great example of this is there's an episode where the Joker's hijack some sort of military hover jet, and Terry's following it, and he says it's fast, it's probably military spec, it's going to be hard to catch it. Old man Bruce is in the cave doing something else, and he says, well, you better catch it. He's not telling him, hey, you need to do this, you need to do that. He's just saying, okay, sounds like you got it.
Actually, one of my favorite examples of what you're saying there, Red, is, and go back to Shriek, like the first Shriek episode was, well, I figured Bruce is like, I figured something was off because it kept calling me Bruce in my head. And he's like, well, what do you call yourself? And Bruce just looks at him, and Terry's like, oh, yeah, but that's my name now. And Bruce just gives him like, right. Like, just that moment illustrates so much of like how they work together and all that. And the... Also, one of my favorite villains, it also involves one of my favorite side characters, was Dr. Cuvier and the Splicers. Like, the idea that in the future there's this genetic cosmetic science that you can hit yourself with this needle and, you know, have like cat's eyes, or you can look like a ram man or a snake man or something like that. And just that's a classic super villainish conceit that I love. But it also involves Terry bonding even more with Bruce's dog, Ace.
But not
like, you know, with the bat collar and the cowl. It's just this Great Dane. So what if Scooby-Doo wasn't a complete coward? And Terry uses Ace to track down Cuvier and the Splicers because the science has been declared illegal. And he becomes this huge, like, John Carpenter... esque, like, amorphous sort of beast, because Terry's like tagged him with like a dozen of these DNA samples and just runs over his body, a roughshod over his body. And Ace goes to rescue his friend, and Cuvier's about to hit him with this stinger. And one of my favorite Terry lines is like, don't touch my dog, and just takes him out.
Well, Ace is another great part of Batman Beyond, because Ace the Hound is a story of old man Bruce is just driving to Crime Alley doing his yearly tribute, and he comes across an injured Ace. He nurses Ace back to health, and Ace is tells the story of one of the greatest things about dogs, and that is their undying loyalty.
Yeah, and they don't forget, because Ace escaped from a dog fighting ring. And for all intents and purposes, he has the same sort of surly disposition that Bruce has. Like, I don't want anyone else's help. I can take care of this myself, kind of thing. And eventually he grows to love the crusty old man.
And like I said, that's what I love about Ace. Go ahead, Red.
I was about to say detective.
Oh, God. But
one of seriously, lady, you're creeping me out. She kissed me.
But one of my favorite other villain moments in Batman Beyond, before we move off of this, is there's this scene where Ink actually captures Terry and says, I want the old one, too, is what Ink is like. So she tries to lure Bruce there. And Bruce shows up in a trench coat. And for a second, you know, the trench coat shreds off, and there is old man Bruce in the fucking Kingdom Come armor.
Yeah, that was a great... The Ink episodes, a lot of the because there's like three major Ink episodes. She's honestly one of my favorite villains they came up with, but that moment where Bruce comes out and it just Iron Man's up like that, it was awesome. And the first Ink episode where she infiltrates the Batcave, and I love how they figure out that she snuck in, is like, the Batmobile is like da-da-da pounds heavier. And Bruce actually puts on the Grey Ghost's hat and goggles to disguise himself while they're dealing with her.
Yes.
Now, another DC, Red mentioned before, there's Kingdom Come, which there's a couple of different flavors of that I've enjoyed. There's the original miniseries.
Yes.
And then there's the Kingdom event that came a couple years later. Those are the best ones. And they have used these this future where Batman is still doing his thing. Superman's retired after this a bunch of anti-heroes are tracking down, was it Magog? Or Magog? I forget who. Which
Magog is Magog is in Kingdom Come. Gog is in the Kingdom.
Yeah. But no, it's just Magog and these anti-heroes track down as the Parasite. And they're trying to capture him, but you know they literally have no concept other than burning the village in order to save it. And this Parasite rips open Captain Atom and irradiates Kansas.
Yes.
And now all these heroes running around have no concept of, you know, justice or morality. And it literally ends up becoming this generational battle of sorts.
Kingdom Come is a commentary on 90s comics. Because 90s comics were becoming, like, extreme. You have to be a cyborg, and you have to have big guns, and you have to be violent, and you have to... And you can't be a good guy. You have to be gray, morally gray. Everybody's morally gray.
Yeah, and
I got a big fucking cigar. My name's Cable. I'm gonna blast your
ends justify
off.
The means.
And literally, it's not even subtle. It's not even subtle because Magog is literally Cable dressed as the Golden Ox, the false idol. It's transparent at best, obvious at worst. Like the religious symbology in Kingdom Come is also extremely extremely obvious. I still love it because I loved Alex Ross's artwork in it, and there was even though there was a lot of derision, a lot of taking shots at, as before mentioned, Cable, there was a lot of love in it too.
Yeah. And obviously, like, I have the hardcover collection of the miniseries, and in the back it has these spreads that Alex Ross did for the covers, and it has, like, the – I forget what you call it. It's someone who's got, like, a one next to this character's head, and you look on the chart. Like, it basically lists, like, every future version of all these characters that are – either like new heroes or inspired by older heroes
or progeny,
all the progeny, and all, you know, gorgeously painted by Alex Ross. And following that, you had The Kingdom, which they tried to bring Gog, not Magog, but Gog as from like 10 years in the future. And he It's this guy who's rescued by Clark in the future and creates like this religion of Superman. And then he goes insane when he meets Superman. He says like, I'm not a god. And he doesn't really handle it well. And they have, was it the Quintessence, which is Zeus, High Father, the Phantom Stranger, Guardian of the Universe, and Shazam. And they empower him, and he goes back literally every day from his future to the modern day. And he goes back one day, kills Superman, goes back, kills Superman. So he's messing up the time stream. And this was written by Mark Waid, as yes. was the original. And this is where they introduced the concept of hypertime, which is to bring back the DC multiverse, something they hadn't used in years. But now if like Golden Age Superman crosses the hyperstream into modern day DC comics, the longer he's there, the greater the chances of the whole of reality crumbling again. So, I mean, they introduced that, and you meet like Batman and Talia's son. I think he's literally called heir to the demon, but I can't pronounce his proper name.
His name is Son of Ibn? The Bat. His name is Son of the Bat in fucking Arabic, because again, yeah. Mark Waid, not the subtle man. One thing I have to point out, talking about the DC futures, we have to mention DC 1 million before we end the show, guys.
We mentioned it right on. Okay. Moving on.
What, you don't like DC 1 million, Red?
There's nothing to talk about. It's garbage.
DC 1 million is another case of, like MC2, I have a high concept of a character. Okay, great. What can you do with it? I have a high concept of a character. Saying it louder doesn't make it good. I have a high concept.
See, and I agree with you guys. Like, a lot of the DC 1 million stories were trash. But the core conceit of it is, this is the future of DC Comics in a time where where the 1 millionth issue of Action Comics would have been published, which was like in the year 85,201. It's the 853rd century. And you get the Justice, there's all these different Justice League. Yeah, and like Superman, the Superman of DC 1 million, he has every superpower Superman has ever had in the comics, from super telepathy to probably shooting the mini versions of Superman out of his palm so he can have a day off. Batman, Arkham Asylum is now the entire planet of Pluto, and in an event that killed his parents, the psychic scream of all these people that died on Pluto washed over him, and he was more or less driven insane to like a millionth degree, and now he's the Batman of the universe. And Aquaman is this water elemental from Neptune. They got the John Fox Flash from the Wally West run of Flash. He's traveled into the future and become the Flash now. It's very much not even cyberpunk. Again, I keep going back to Blade Runner. I wish I had a better term, but there's the idea of consumption and greed to an extent of just trying to get as much as you can, no matter how you can, is prevalent in these stories.
With DC 1 million, the only idea I thought was interesting was Superman's story. Not Superman 1 million, but Superman, our Superman, is still alive in DC 1 million.
Lives in the sun.
Lives in the sun. And the most interesting part of the story is the fact that he travels through the universe. And even, I think they said that he looked like a lost pilgrim when he came back to Earth. Someone who, cracked through the gates of heaven and still couldn't find what he was looking for. And there was just something very poetic about it. Of, this is a Superman that's lived for thousands of years, and the one thing that he wants is just to have Lois back.
And by the end of it, he not only uses his, however many billion powers he has to bring Lois back. He also resurrects Krypton. And I mean, like, from the point the planet explodes, because they have this thing, is my son. It's Jor-El takes down his hood and he embraces his son, which, and that's all kind of showed in the last few pages of the mini, where, you know, the memories of everything are like fading away from the Justice League and Kyle Rayner, who was it the Superman 1 million, uses his like super telekinesis to help him and help Green Lantern contain an exploding sun.
The other thing to keep in mind with Superman 1 million is he isn't, by himself, he isn't as powerful as Superman. Superman, the real Superman in the sun, is actually siphoning power to him and all of his progeny, because Superman 1 million's DNA is actually diluted by years and years and years and centuries of intermingling with humans. Except for there's like a fifth dimensional imp that gets in the bloodline somewhere.
Yeah. Or you, like with Superman 1 million, like he literally only has his full, not that he's out of sunlight, but specifically the power that he's getting from OG Superman in, you know, the 853rd century, because he has this incredible stockpile, but he almost runs out of power and dies, where he literally pulls a Super Bitch Prime and punches the time stream so he can get back to the future and save the universe. And yes, that's what I will call that move, and that's what I will call that character, because he was a super bitch, and a super bitch he shall remain.
There's not much else we could really say about Superman, DC 1 million, other than it exists, it's a thing, it's a novelty, and other than the writers coming with high concepts of Grant Morrison, Grant Morrison coming with high concepts of what if Aquaman's really an Aquaman? What if Batman's the warden of an interstellar prison? What if Wonder Woman's a green plant Amazon lady, and what if the atom actually can turn into atoms? Like,
yeah,
it's other than that, other than like the high concept, there's no fucking meat there.
It's good for a read through, like the core miniseries and the plethora of one shots, you know, pick and choose. There's a lot of fun there. There's only a few of the one shots that actually contribute to the overall storyline, so you don't have to read everything if you want to go like that. And one last DC future that I just want to bring up, because they're currently building it in DC Comics, specifically in the Batman, is the idea of the future state. Now, originally the future state, we knew that as 5G, and it was this plan with, you know, Dan DiDio before he was let go from DC Comics, that they were going to move the characters forward. Like, you're going to have somebody, Jonathan or John Kent's going to become Superman. You're going to have a new Wonder Woman, who apparently is going to be this Yara Flores, like the new Wonder Girl. And it was that didn't happen the way they planned. And it became like this fifth week event with, you know, some one shots and no really core story going through, except for the Bat Family titles. And they are actually actively building that story up in the Batman titles right now. Like, in the dark future, Gotham's become a police state and it's ruled over by the Magistrate, which are basically like super enhanced SWAT team sort of soldiers who violently hunt down any vigilante operating in Gotham, and they're building towards that. Now, I've enjoyed what I've read so far. I'd like to see if they actually pull this off, or until I see signs of, oh, look, it's time for another crisis. Let's okay, yeah, fine. I was enjoying this, but let's just reset the continuity again. The fact that DC's building it and they're not just like doing a time skip, I think there's a little more meat in that bone, but not much. Right. Now, before we close it off, guys, is there any future that we haven't, that you just briefly want to mention?
Not really.
The one last one. Have you ever read Superman Batman Generations?
Yes.
By John Byrne. That it's a sliding time scale. It starts from, like, you know, where they first became Superman and Batman in the 30s, and just an actual linear time progression of that storyline. So eventually we get some future tales there that I really much enjoyed. Plus, it's all written and drawn by John Byrne. And if you don't know who John Byrne is, boys and girls, educate yourself. You won't be dissatisfied.
Well, there's one alternate feature that you have to mention, or we're going to get comments and people are going to try to burn us down.
Is it written by a crazy man who likes whores?
Yes.
Okay.
That's Dark Knight Returns.
The first one is worth reading. The sequels came out way too late for them to matter, and it was well into Frank Miller's crazy old man shenanigans.
I've heard compelling arguments that Frank Miller is doing it on purpose.
So he's like pulling an Andy Kaufman and the comic fans?
That's what I'm hearing, and I've read artist notes he's given to fucking what's his name, Jim Lee, and it says stuff like, do this thing here, the fans hate this, and shit like that. It's, I know that it's not 100% proof, but I am starting to warm up to this theory that Frank Miller is just fucking with us.
No.
Wow.
Sometimes in order for when you write something, you have to poison the well a little bit. You have to do something that people don't like. So that way, your main character or your hero can rise above it. If you're doing everything that somebody likes, it's called a boring fucking comic nobody wants to fucking read. Because there's no drama. There's no pathos. There's no fucking character development. There's nothing. It's just, I'm a superhero and I'm saving the day. I save the day every fucking day. And I never get hurt, and my fucking story is written for babies, and nobody else but fucking 3-year-olds are going to ever fucking read it. So when you see like cliff notes of Frank Miller saying, "Oh, the fans are going to hate this," he's poisoning the well a bit, so that way he can do something better later on. So the fans will go, "Oh, Frank Miller was great. He did that on purpose. It's awesome."
You gotta wonder if he got into some drugs when he did that cameo role in RoboCop 2, and that's where it all really started.
Well, he's a massive fucking alcoholic. He looks like he's 80 years old when he's like fucking 50.
He used to look like Ray Romano.
There's a picture of him with Stan Lee where they take Stan Lee's 90 years old and dying. And Frank Miller looks older than fucking Stan Lee and looks like he's dying. And Frank Miller is 40 years younger than Stan Lee.
But he looks like he's dying.
Like, alcohol is a hell of a drug, boys and girls. Yeah.
I don't know. See, I like your argument, Red. I like Ben's thing there. Is like, oh man, I can't wait to see how this ends.
Like, Frank Miller's crazy as fuck, but he also knows what he's doing. Like, he knows how to write. I'll give him that. He knows how to write. I've seen his scripts. I've seen his works and shit like that. I cannot deny he does not know how to write. He knows all the basics. He knows everything that needs to be done in order to write a compelling story. But he's also fucking crazy.
So,
and a lot of people see, like, you have a writer that's fucking crazy and out there, and you go, that guy can be creative. He can do something all new and something nobody ever thought about. You take that risk. You take that gamble. Then you get fucking DK2, which is based off of fucking 9/11 because Frank Miller saw it happen outside his fucking window and shit.
Or that Superman Year One comic that still isn't finished.
That one was terrible. And I don't know what's more disappointing, the Frank Miller, because I already knew it wasn't going to be good with Frank Miller writing it, or fucking the Romita Jr.'s art becoming more and more bland.
Like, here's the difference between Frank Miller on the sauce and kind of on the sauce, but not really pushing it. When Frank Miller is fucking on the sauce and crazy as fuck, you get All-Star Batman and Robin. When Frank Miller is having a casual drink and keeping it cool and not really fucking getting hosed. You get Batman Year One. So he can do a really fucking good job and he can do a really fucking crazy job.
And right in that sweet spot in the middle is where we get Sin City.
Yeah. But Dark Knight Returns is a commentary. Like, Frank Miller became, he aged to 36 years old. And Batman's 35. And he realized one day, I'm older than Batman now.
Yeah.
So he wanted to write a story where Batman, what would happen if Batman's middle-aged? What would happen if Batman's older?
Yeah.
And that's what fucking Dark Knight Returns is. It's Batman beyond his time, going fucking crazy, trying to fucking stay relevant. A lot of people think that it's Batman being triumphant and shit, but no, it's an old man. It's the best way I can describe fucking Dark Knight Returns is a better version of it would be Unforgiven by fucking Clint Eastwood.
Ooh, that's good.
Yes.
I like that.
Like, they're two very similar stories, but Unforgiven does it way fucking better.
Damn, I never thought about that, Red. That's nice. I like that. So out of the futures that we've discussed as we kind of wrap it up here, which one would you guys suggest that listeners take a chance on and read? Just one of them.
Days of Future Past. That's easy. Well, actually, you know, I take that back. MC2, but the Spiral title only.
How about you, Red?
I wouldn't recommend anybody to read anything. I'd recommend that you watch Batman Beyond.
Okay, that's a good one.
That's fair. And honestly, I'm going to recommend if you like anything more than Marvel or DC, I'd probably lean towards Marvel 2099. It's trash, but it's enjoyable trash. Right. Or DC 1 million just to piss Red off, because, you know.
All right, well, that's our show on alternate futures. This is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
Say goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.